Imagine having sold and exited over 120 businesses while still in your 40s. Buckle on up as you are about to hear how to succeed in business and how to have an exit plan from a mega successful entrepreneur.
Welcome to the Motivation Show podcast and get ready to be inspired, motivated, and achieve massive success. And now, your host, the mayor of motivation, Eli Marcus.
Our guest on the Motivation Show today is a businessman who is known as the King of Exits. He has owned over 125 companies and exited over 85 of them successfully. His current private equity firm, Collective Influence, has significant holdings as well. Of those holdings, the private equity firm owns Think Realty, American Association of Private Lenders, Apticode, FitCon, Tax Free Crypto, Because Coffee, The Power Room, Money Is, and we can go on probably all day long about 10 other companies here. He is also known for creating an operating system that manages the growth of his custom companies systematically, allowing him the greatest odds for success. And don't we all want that? His operating system is known as the Empire Operating System. Welcome to the Motivation Show, Eddie Wilson.
Thank you so much. Glad to be on here today.
Well, you have an incredible bio there. I think the first question that popped into my head is like, you exited over 85 of them. What happened to the other 40 companies?
Well, I'm actually over 120 companies exited. So we're just constantly churning. And the thing is, I still have a bunch of companies that I currently own. So right now, we have, I think, 27 under the umbrella. So we're just constantly buying and selling businesses. Not all of them go as planned. You know, there have been a couple that didn't make it or a couple that, you know, we've had to merge together with others. But yeah, it's always fluid for sure.
And you know, my listeners are probably saying, thank God some of them didn't make it, because you got to humble a guy who's started hundreds of companies here. You know, they're all successes. Everybody would feel like a failure. So, of course, one of my thoughts is always, how did this all begin? You know, when did you start becoming an entrepreneur, Eddie? And what inspired you to become an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I'm a third generation real estate investor. My grandfather is a real estate investor. Dad's a real estate investor. So entrepreneurship runs in the family. Something unique, though, is that my dad, he's probably started four or five companies, still runs quite a few of them. And my mother also has started companies. So both my mom and my dad are both entrepreneurs. So I went into, you know, college, normal pathway, and went into radio and television. And I was in radio and TV and for the first 10 years of my corporate career, and ended up selling a program to Fox, and then ended up accidentally selling an ad agency that I created, and just found this kind of process of buying, selling, creating businesses, and, you know, was off to the races in my 20s.
So how did you become so successful so young? And even now, what are you, like in your 40s? And you already have like a 10 lifetimes worth of success. How do you do it?
Yeah. So the first business that I actually ever sold, I didn't intend to sell it. I was just looking for capital. And I had a big ad agency and I had taken on a big client, needed some capital. While sourcing that capital, I ended up getting taken advantage of. And then it was kind of this forced acquisition deal. And I'll spare you the details, but in the end, I left a lot of money on the table, was super frustrated, and decided I was going to learn that game. But I had a very emotionally intelligent mother who really taught me to have gratitude in everything. And if you can find gratitude in your losses or gratitude in the negative times, it often is a catalyst for something greater. So when I was making this decision to go through with selling the business rather than to let it fail, I began to think through like thoughts of gratitude. What am I grateful for? Well, I was getting on that business what, you know, we refer to as a multiple. So like 7x EBITDA was what they were paying me for this business. And I began to think through like, well, you know, what am I getting? What can I be grateful for? And even though I didn't want to sell the company, I felt like it was premature. What essentially that means is that they're giving me 7 times, let's just say EBITDA's, your, you know, earnings before income, like it's, let's just say net dollars, right? Then they're giving me essentially 7 years of my life back, because if I just earned the same amount of money for the next 7 years, they're essentially giving that to me today. And so even though I didn't want to sell and I felt like I was leaving money on the table, I basically got 7 years worth of my life back and decided that that was going to be a path that I chose, because where else can you buy a company, you know, buy an asset or a company or an investment for, spend a year or two and then get 7 years or 8 years or 10 years worth of earnings in that time period. So essentially I'm shrinking down time by buying and selling these companies and selling them on multiples, and I don't have to operate them. And so that really has been the motivation, is really it's more time management, getting back my time and living, you know, I want to live a lot of lifetimes in a very short span of time.
Well, you know, I think your mom was a very wise lady. And I want to get back to that word gratitude. That's such a powerful word, because, I mean, there's so many people in business today, and I watch them and I deal with them. They're pretty angry. they're some of them are pretty miserable, because, you know, business is not easy to run. You know, you got to learn new things all the time. How do you stay in that gratitude instead of in that negative space? I mean, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's very hard. And what you have to do is you have to be mentally trained into a place where it's like every roadblock, every valley you face, every struggle, every trial, it either takes you one of two ways. It either takes you down this path of a self-imposed ceiling, right? Like, well, I got taken advantage of when I was a younger business owner, so I'm just the guy that gets taken advantage of. I'm the guy that got taken advantage of, and it creates these identities, and then it creates ceilings in our life. Or if you can find gratitude in that area, it actually is a different path and it creates a catalyst for growth. So because it's played out in my life so many times, it's a rhythm now of just, you know, if it's tough, let's find some gratitude. Let's find the silver lining. Because if you can find true gratitude in the difficult days, you learn more, you know, you learn more lessons in those days. You know, like there's a kind of a scriptural adage, right? Like go, like almost like biblical. And it says that there's more to be learned in the house of mourning than the house of feasting. And it's like concept that it's like we can learn so much more in the difficult days than we can on the mountaintops. But the only way that you learn it is through gratitude.
That's powerfully said. So Eddie, should every business person, every entrepreneur have an exit strategy? I mean, is there an ideal time frame to exit a business, or is it basically, is it a standard 5 to 7 years, or every business should be different?
Yes. So I believe the Empire Operating System I have teaches that there's 5 phases of business. There's startup, then there's perseverance, that's the pre-profit phase. Then you get into what we call viability, right people, right seats, right capital. Then you have scale. And then lastly, you have succession. Succession is when you've hit the ceiling and you're moving on. You're either letting somebody else run it, you sell it, whatever it is. When you get into this phase number 2, which is perseverance, where you're not even making consistent profit yet, you should start what we call a succession plan. Because what happens is people that grow and build their business without a plan of what's going to happen in the end, grow it improperly. But if you have a succession plan, you know what the end is, you know what your end goal is, all of a sudden your pathway of growth aligns better and you grow a proper company. I don't think that there's a standard time to buy or sell a business. And there's businesses that I have today that I'll probably never sell. My coffee company I built really just to give back to my charity. I might, who knows? I've sold a lot of businesses that I said I wouldn't. But, you know, I don't intend to sell some of the businesses I have. You take a dentist or a doctor today, or a chiropractor or an electrician, and you've got 15 million baby boomers that have businesses just like that. They've got their dental practice, or they've got their, you know, they've got an electrical installation company. And 15 million of them are going to walk away from their businesses in the next 10 years. They say anywhere from 7 to 10 years. 15 million baby boomers are going to walk away. And the big problem we see today is there is no succession plan. These dentists that, you know, are in their late 60s that are just tired of being in the dental chair, they're letting their customers go. They're turning the close sign on their door and they're never walking back in. They're not getting value out of the exit. And that's because they have no succession plan. So I always say in perseverance, you always start the succession plan. Whether or not you actually act on it or not, at least you grew your business properly.
So many entrepreneurs don't have any kids to pass their businesses along to, and that's how they think. They think because I don't have somebody to pass along to, basically, at the end of the day, they're just going to shut their business, not thinking maybe there's an alternative way to handle that. So what would you advise someone, let's say it's, you know, even most chiropractors are basically entrepreneurs by themselves. They don't have a team. It's just them. You know, if anything, maybe they have a receptionist up front. What do they do?
Yeah, so
they pass it along to.
There's a ton of value in just their client base.
Yeah.
Hardest thing to do is get a business off the ground and get a consistent client base. And these, you know, baby boomers that are currently in the kind of the twilight phase of their business, they have the hardest thing. Well, the thing is this next generation that's coming up would gladly value it, pay them for it. You know, there's whole strategies of roll up and various things. But I think number one, they got to get a plan together, and they can always do that. You know, I've got a whole system on helping people plan for that. You can go to empireom.com and see it. But it's like for people, they've got to get a plan together. Then they really need to consider what value their business has and what a succession strategy could look like. They don't have heirs that are ready to take it or step into the chiropractic's, you know, seat and start seeing their patients. But there are a lot of other people out there that do.
You know, let's talk a little bit about business growth and scale, which I understand you're pretty proficient at. You know, I thinking how you, your mom, and your dad actually ever sat at the dinner table with all three of you so busy and being entrepreneurs. And I think, you know, most entrepreneurs struggle with time, you know, how you can grow and scale your business and still have a life. There's, you know, so much rapid change out there. It seems like every single day you got to learn something. Maybe 30 years ago, it really wasn't like that. You know, it's like things pretty much went on and on and on. But, you know, if you're in the Blockbuster video business, you know, you're in trouble. And today is a lot of those things. You know, things get outmoded very quickly. So, you know, is there a way to scale? How do you scale without working 7 days a week and 16 hours a day? Are there really shortcuts?
There are shortcuts, and there are certain things that you have to focus on. And the biggest thing is the first step that most entrepreneurs need to take in scaling or growing their business is really get to a place where they are proficient with their own time and focusing on the thing that they're greatest at, right? Some people are just predisposed to certain things, and you've got the biggest issue that I see in small businesses growing is that they're too controlling. They try to hold on to everything. They try to wear every single hat. You know, there's so many fractional companies out there that'll fractionalize and help you with your bookkeeping, and help you with your HR, will help you with your operations, will help you with whatever, sales, marketing. There's so many fractional companies out there, and oftentimes it's just them letting go and really focusing on what they're great at. They might be great at the relationship building. They should put their time and effort there. They might be great at the operations or sales or whatever it is. And they really need to isolate down their time to what they're really, really great at and find support for all the things they're not great at. That's step number one. Then once you begin to do that, then you start trying to put, you know, full-time people in place that can actually do it for you.
So what does Eddie Wilson handle himself, and what does Eddie Wilson prefer to delegate?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm the CEO of my private equity firm. We have 27 companies. We're a couple hundred employees right now. And for me, I've run companies of up to 6,000. You know, my private equity firm that I sold in 2019, we were 86 companies. We sold 76 of them that year. 86 companies, we were around 6,000 employees. So I've got it down to a science for what I do, you know, have for a while. But the three things I handle, number one, I know my numbers. I directly interact with my CFO and my COO almost every single day. I know the numbers on every one of my companies every single day. And we dive into the numbers deep. That's both financial numbers, but it's also, you know, operational KPIs, stuff like that. Number two, I know my people. Culture rests on my shoulders. It's my job to create the right environment that people enjoy working in, that they want to stay in. And I got to know my people. I have to know the capability of my leaders. I have to know the capability of those that manage and those that follow the managers. And so I have to know my people. And number three, my job is to build the big relationships. So I never let the big relationships that can make or break my company exist outside of my reach or my touch. So those are my three things that I manage on a weekly basis. Obviously, there's a lot of meetings and things like that all fall into that, but those are the three responsibilities of a CEO.
Well, before we got on the air, we talked a little bit about building relationships or collaboration. And Also, you talked about employees. How do you find the best employees and what traits do you actually look for when hiring?
Yeah, so I take a very different approach. A few years ago, a man really challenged me on what we would call exposure. I was always the guy that hid in the background. I don't have a problem sitting there in the background and not no one knowing my name. That doesn't bother me a bit. And a couple of years ago, I got pushed on, why aren't you building a bigger social media presence? Why aren't you, you know, I had a $1 billion exit in 2019 and everybody called, right? Come on my show, come do this TV interview, come, you know, on Fox News, whatever, and speak at this event. And I kind of just resisted it, you know? And what this man said to me, he said, you know, everything you want is on the other side of exposure. I said, I think everything I don't want is on the other side of exposure. And he said, do you need more good employees? I said, yeah. He said, well, if the world knew who you were and what you do, the employees would chase you. He said, do you need more capital? I said, well, sure. All of us need more capital for deals or real estate or whatever. He said, if the world knew who you were, they'd throw money at you. He said, you know, he just kind of kept going down this path.
Oh, I'm liking this. Go ahead.
For the last 2 to 3 years, I've really spent a lot of time on creating the right social presence, being on shows just like yours. And then in the last year, we created the Aspire Tour, which is a massive stage that gives me a ton of exposure. The best part about that is the employees, the really, really good ones, the rockstar employees are now finding me, and I have to do very little to find them. The amount of people that come up to me and say, hey, I'd love to work for you. I'd love to be a part of what you're doing. Or I put it out on social media. I'm looking for a new whatever, chief whatever. It's like the amount of resumes and information that come flowing in immediately because of that exposure is really, really great.
Well, I can relate to that, you know, since, you know, I had once produced an event in New York City back in the late 90s with Michael Jackson at Carnegie Hall, but no one ever knew that I did it. and now I don't mind telling people a little bit more about that because you're right. When people hear that you've been doing some interesting things, you know, they'll find you a little bit more organically. So I can certainly relate to that. I want to get into this incredible event that I've been learning about called the Aspire Tour. And that goes right up my alley because I've done over 3,000 events myself. But this one has some names in there that get me goosebumps, you know, get me excited. You know, that's not easy to do for someone who's done over 3,000 events. You got Kevin O'Leary and Marcus Lemonis from The Profit Show, Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod there. You got Gary Vee. And those are just the slouches. I'm joking, of course. But you've got some incredible lineup. Tell me what inspired you to create the Aspire Tour.
Yeah, my business partner, Andrew Cordell, he was a international speaker. He spoke with all the big, great speakers, and he loved the event space. And I've always believed that if you want to build great companies, you build community first. So every company in my private equity firm is typically built because of a community that I have. So I have a community called Think Realty. It's a real estate media platform that has a million real estate investors that touch it on a consistent basis. AAPL, the American Association of Private Lenders. It's a community just for private lenders. FitCon, world's largest fitness convention. It's like I've got all these communities. And the one community that we didn't have a good, let's say, community built for is for small business to medium-sized business entrepreneurs, people that really aspire for bigger things and want more exposure. And so we decided that we would jump into the event space really because there was a vacuum after COVID was over, right? Like we started this about 14, 15 months ago. I think we were one of the first ones back to it that were putting on big, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people events. And it's been going amazing. We thought we'd try one. We started down in South Florida and Fort Lauderdale. I'm sorry, we started in Dallas. And Dallas went really great. I think we had close to 2,200 our very first event. And then we went to Fort Lauderdale and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we, and now we're, you know, we just booked Madison Square Garden for July 20th this year. So it's just this consistent growth. And we're just seeing a massive amount of people showing up. And it's interesting, the celebrities are actually finding us now. In the beginning, we had to beg them, you know, had to beg them and sell them on this idea and what we were doing. And, you know, a year into it, you're getting all the phone calls from them saying, hey, do you think I should be on your stage? And so now we've got people like Kevin Hart and a bunch of other like really large A-list celebrities that are they're excited about being on our stage and are asking to be a part of it.
I understand, Eddie, these are kind of very immersive kind of days. You're going from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And I believe that if you're going to learn, you're going to have to be immersive. You know, there's no shortcut 1-hour course that you're going to take. If you're not there for the 12 hours, you know, you're going to miss a lot. And so that is very exciting. And so what do you hope that people will actually exit with after they go to this event? What's going to happen to them, in your opinion?
Yeah, there's really two things. And the first thing is that I believe that they're going to get a very authentic, vulnerable look at what these celebrities or these big business owners go through to actually become successful. One of the rules we have is if you're going to stand on our stage, you're going to be vulnerable and you got to be open, right? Like, it's not a facade. This isn't a thing that we're trying to I don't want people up there beating their chest. What I want them up there doing is saying, this is how I got here. These are the steps. This is the hardship. And so we've got a lot of great people to do that. You know, Mark Cuban, you know, and some of these guys that are so world renowned for their business acumen, the things that they've said on our stage are just mind blowing. And they've been a great teacher to me as well. The second thing is, I believe that as you aspire for more, we really need to consider the impact we're making. So, you know, I sold a company for over $1 billion and really was still empty, unfulfilled, dissatisfied, and really have turned my life pointing towards philanthropic things. And so the other thing is I want to inspire them because most of these people in this room are aspiring entrepreneurs. They're people that have businesses, they want to grow, they want to scale. And a large majority of them will be the ones that are successful. People that come to Aspire are not the non-successful people. They're usually the successful people because they're the ones that are pursuing and chasing. And so I want to get in front of them and express to them, which I do at the start of every single Aspire, that you could find success, but another house, another dollar bill is not going to make you happy.
Find fulfillment.
So we push fulfillment hard, that you've got to find somebody else that can't necessarily impact their own life, and you got to make impact on them.
So, Eddie, I've been reading about the humanitarian nonprofit organization that you put together. I'm not surprised a guy like you would do something like that. It seems like you have four pillars there. You're supplying clean water, feeding hungry children. You're building and maintaining orphanages and helping others start businesses. I mean, that's pretty ambitious. Tell us a little bit more about that. What are your goals with it?
Our goal is really simple, and that is to go into underserved areas around the world and make impact on young people to help them with feeding, education, and growth. And we do that through clean water projects and orphanages and feeding centers and education centers. And then really, we build businesses overseas to seed and keep the capital in that community. And so, you know, why just grow businesses here in the U.S.? We've built over 17 companies overseas that specifically are just to continue to pump capital into those communities to help these young people find success. We're in 108 countries now. It's been a crazy, crazy ride for the last few years. And it's just growing and growing and growing. The organization is called Impact Others. And it's just been a phenomenal thing.
Any parting words for our audience today, Eddie?
Yeah, the parting words would just be, as you guys are being motivated, as you are chasing success, don't forget to look back at those that can't find success on their own and reach back, you know, a hand to them. And because there's massive fulfillment and joy in helping others get to where you are and helping them get to where they want to go.
Now, that's the definition of a true entrepreneur, somebody who takes into consideration the people, you know, behind you, beside you. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Eddie.
Thank you.
If you would like to inquire about having Eli motivate your team, speak at your event, or coach you personally for massive success, email themotivationshow@gmail.com. That's themotivationshow@gmail.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.